Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. The speech you're about to listen to was originally recorded at DEF CON 5 at the Aladdin Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1997. Now all rights are reserved except permission for educational non-profit use. If you have any questions about DEF CON or the copyright status, contact me at dtangent@defcon.org or the website at www.defcon.org. Now kick back and relax.
Who's got the disc? Gotcha. The last thing here, first of all, no one in this room is going to be able to use it because it requires 5 1/4 inch of disc. Microsoft Flight Simulator from 7/17/88. Somebody obviously waved it because it's not on the original disc. So you can say DP has the ultimate and old scale wear. This is definitely not the zero day right here. I'll leave that up here too. Okay, I'm going to do a couple more here, and then we can, since Rango never showed up, I guess it's, try to find him for tomorrow, then I guess it's a, what? A spot?
There's a spot, there is time!
What? Get your ass up there. I'll let you get away from this stuff, and then...
I don't want to take it home. Oh, I think you have 20 minutes, where are you?
Okay, Randall's here. Everybody give him a round of applause. Your technique is pretty cool.
He's dead.
Yes, you have special anti-laser sunglasses on. Can you see the technique? So we're going to, can you bring down the front lights here? Or you've got the, do you have a slide or how are you going to do it?
Overhead,
and let me hand you down the mic.
Well, let's go on and see what happens.
Can everybody see it fine? We can roll the whole thing forward, I think it gets bigger. Excellent. Can everybody see it?
Can
we
see that?
See
what? Can you see it?
Yeah, here. I was just untangling all the cords and shit. Okay. Cool, thanks.
That's just the thing that we can actually record.
Okay. Yeah, I don't need to, like, be on camera or anything. I just want to be able to get through the slides and everything.
Okay. That's good. I have the bill set to contend with.
Can I go around the door prize?
Yes. That's good. I'll go around the door prize.
Hi! I'm Wrangler.
Hi, Wrangler.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about packet sniffing. Okay? This is really technical, boring stuff. So I'm going to try to make it not be technical and boring stuff. I'm going to try to make it interesting. Okay? If I don't, laser me. I don't know. Okay. I will stop for questions periodically, okay? And I've got foils and cool stuff like that. And I haven't done this before. It's completely extemporaneous. So anybody who saw the Woodstock, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, We're Scared, you know what I'm saying. Okay? Packet sniffing is a term that's used to describe illicit network monitoring. What you're doing is you are monitoring all the traffic that's traveling on the physical network to which you're connected. Okay? Now, there's a couple of caveats here. Number one, most of the people who can do this kind of thing already have root access. You may ask yourself, well, why the heck do I want to talk about something if I already need root access?
Well, if you have root access to one, one machine, good for you. But you don't have root access to other machines on that network yet, and you don't have root access to other machines on other networks yet. And people are telnetting back and forth on this network, and wouldn't it be nice if you could find out some other things to help you get from where you are to where you want to go? That's what packet sniffing is for. Okay, speak louder. I will do that. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do this in a certain order, which of course is variable. I'm going to start out by talking about why this is useful. Then I'm going to do a real quick network tutorial. Some of you are going to be bored out of your minds. I will rush through it if you are. Some of you may not know, and I will slow down. After that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the mechanisms that are involved in actually doing this kind of thing. Then I'm going to actually go into some programming examples and show you godforsaken code. And at that point, you may want to go get coffee. But come back, because after that, I'm going to talk about what I call CYA, which is namely, after you've done this, you don't want people to know you've done it, so you do some things to make sure they can't find out that you did it. That's just sort of important. That's what I'm going to do. Okay? Like I said, the first thing is the usefulness of it. If you have root shell access, good for you on one machine, right? But you don't have root shell access on other machines. You don't have access to other networks. And I should also qualify this by saying I'm going to basically talk about Ethernet protocols. I'm going to talk about TCP/IP. I may mention some other things along the way, like IPX or token ring or things like that. But I'm not going to focus on those during the talk. If you've got a specific concern, come find me offline. Okay? This illustration up here, my first illustration, is what I call the TCP/IP network model. And while you're staring at it, I'll talk a little bit about the network. Who here, raise hands if you consider yourself network literate, so I can decide how deep I have to go into this. Good. I'm going to skim over the network part. I can tell. Good. TCP/IP protocol suite technically includes a lot of things. It includes RLogin. It includes Telnet. It includes FTP, all those things that you're familiar with are part of what's called the TCP/IP suite. Those protocols transmit username and password information in clear text across the network. Okay? We are not talking encryption here. We're talking clear text transmission. So, all you have to do is get that transmission someplace that you can look at it, and you have compromised the network. Okay? How do you do that? Packet sniffing. There's the hardware implementation and there's the software implementation. I'm going to talk about that. So I'm going to go through this fast now. That's good because I don't have to do all the network stuff. Packet sniffing is a misnomer. It's not really packets that you capture. It's frames on the Ethernet. Okay. The network, obviously the network layers that are here, I don't need to show you that stuff. And I fortunately also don't have to show you. Well, I'll show you this anyway, just for those who may not be really well-versed in it, okay? The different layers of the network model that I just showed you, this is a model of how the data is encapsulated going down from the application layer down to the network and back up. For those of you who aren't really familiar with the intricacies of it, okay? At the top, you just have your data, whatever that happens to be, you're typing on the screen. And as it goes down through the transport layer and the network layer and the link layer, you get headers and trailers added onto it before you get your final Ethernet frame, which is what flows across the physical network wire, okay? So what you're capturing when you're doing packet sniffing is that thing on the bottom, which is the Ethernet frame, all right? And what you want is a very insignificant little chunk of it. So you need to understand the format of what it is you're getting. Okay, so that you can disassemble it and get what you want out of it and reassemble it into something that's human readable. Okay? While I am doing this, let me stop at this point and ask if there are any questions about anything I've covered so far, because I've really just like blown away half my talk, which is all about network. Any questions about anything I've said so far? We're all happy about this. Good. That's good. Okay. We don't need to see IP datagrams. We know what those look like. We don't need to see Ethernet frames, which is good because that was the one slide that I didn't print properly.
If you're talking about the OSI model, that a lot of it would you, or could you like briefly go through how the graph
okay. The question, for those of you in the back who may not have heard it, was since I didn't describe the OSI model, which is what everybody's really familiar with, the seven-layer network model, how does this relate, this picture up here relate to the OSI model, okay? I purposely didn't use the OSI model because, in my opinion, the OSI model is a nice theoretical model, but it doesn't describe accurately what you're talking about when you're looking at something like the picture that I showed with the different layers where the data is encapsulated, okay? At the application layer, that corresponds to the application layer in the OSI model. The transport layer is pretty much the same. There are some people who will say that it's the next two layers down in the OSI model, and some people will say it's just the next layer down. It's easier for me to say that these four layers, the top layer corresponds directly with the top layer in the OSI model for application. The bottom layer, the link layer, corresponds directly with the bottom two layers of OSI. And the two in the middle roughly correspond to the three layers in between those, or the four layers in between those. Okay? So this is a much more brief explanation of that seven-layer stack. Okay, and I feel it's more appropriate for what we're talking about. Okay, if you're more familiar with the OSI model, just try to translate that. If there's any problems, like I said, come find me offline. Okay, let's talk about the actual, how do you do this sort of thing? Okay. There we go. Again, I said in the beginning I was going to focus on Ethernet and TCP protocol suite. I'm also going to focus basically on the Unix environment, but I will talk a little bit about Windows NT because obviously it supports TCP. Unix is what I'm most familiar with, okay? This is really two guys right there. That's good. Okay. What I've done here is I've tried to put together a chart that explains the mechanisms involved. There's two groups depending on the operating system. The first mechanism is built into the operating system. How many people here are literate and conversant in some kind of Unix? Give me a good, we're fine. This is going to be really short, isn't it? I love this. Okay. What you essentially have in a Unix environment is you have a device that allows you to access those Ethernet frames that we were talking about. You have a device driver running on your system. That device driver accesses your NIC, your network interface card, the actual hardware. If the network interface card supports it, and that's a big if, because there are some cards that don't support it. Most token ring cards don't support promiscuous mode. I'll talk about that in a second. If the hardware supports it, and if your driver will allow you to use a tap, like one of these BPF, which stands for Berkeley Packet Filter, NIP, which stands for Network Interface Tap, or PF, which stands for Packet Filter, and they are correspondently on BSD systems, System 5 systems, and the ever-popular VAX Ultrix. If you can use those, and you have the permissions, in the case of BPF, you need permissions for the device itself. In the others, you actually need to have root shell access, okay? You also need to have the device configured into your kernel, all right? So if you're on the system and you are trying to read or write from this device and you're not getting it configured, it probably means you need to build a new kernel, all right? Which is why I'm going to talk about covering your whatever later on. If you're going to build a new kernel, somebody's going to notice it, okay? Okay, maybe they're not, but, you know, you should try and be polite. So these are the mechanisms that are built intrinsically into the operating system. The other part of this chart, which I covered up at the beginning, is some of the software implementations. Let me move that up there. Anybody see that? Yes? No? Good feedback. Good. What we're looking at here, we're looking at some software components that work with the hardware components, not really hardware, but the operating system components that I just showed you. Okay, TCP dump is very well known, I'm sure. Everybody, who here has worked with TCP dump? Yeah, quite a few people have worked with it. Okay, it's a very well known tool for network monitoring, also known as packet sniffing. Etherfind, which is very popular because it works on SunOS. Anybody worked on SunOS? Yeah, again. Some that you may not have worked with, Ethernet Traffic Monitor and Snoop, which are, again, they are system-dependent for the VAX and for the SGI, respectively. I saw there were a few SGI people here, right? Anybody work with Snoop? One hand? Okay. Two hands? Okay. Good. What we have is, again, we have a combination of you need to have the device to access within the operating system,
and or, because sometimes you don't do that, and I'll explain that later, you have the software that you actually use to get the frame from the device driver up to where you can look at it on the screen. Okay? Okay, again, stop questions. I'm going to get dinner. I like this good. Okay, let's talk about programming. No, let's not talk about programming. Let's talk about one special case first. Is Yogi here? Too bad, because I really wanted Yogi to like make sure I say this right. Okay. Windows NT does not have a network interface tab. Windows NT does have a TCP stack, but it is managed by the registry. Okay? And if you want to put the card into promiscuous mode, and I need to explain what promiscuous mode is because I've said that three times now. Promiscuous mode is a term that refers to the ability of the network card to actually grab every single piece of traffic on the network, whether or not it's destined for that single computer. Okay? Usually the way a network interface card works is it grabs the traffic, looks and says, is this addressed to my computer? If it's a yes, it gets passed up that stack. If it's a no, it gets discarded. Okay? Promiscuous mode says, I don't care whose it's addressed to, pass it up the stack, I want to look at it. Okay? And that is a hardware implementation of the network interface card. Okay? It also has to be supported within the driver. Usually it's nothing more than flipping a bit. Okay? But you have to know which bit to flip. Alright, I've used a MAGE token ring because, as I said, I want to talk a little bit about token ring. I'm talking mostly about Ethernet. I grabbed this off the net. This is not mine. This is somebody else's, but I grabbed it off the net because it's a good example of how you edit the registry, specifically which path you would look for in the registry and what you would set. There is a value called promiscuous mode X. It has a data type of a double word, and if you set it to 1, that means your card is going to go into promiscuous mode after you reboot the machine. Okay? Again, something that somebody might notice. But this is how, if you want to do something, anybody who's looking at how to, you know, secure your network on NT, or if you just want to monitor your network and you're using NT, this is what you're looking for. This is going to be a different value, obviously, depending on your card. If you don't have a matched token ring card, it's not going to look the same. But if you're sophisticated enough to do this, I think you can probably edit the registry and find that one subdirectory that points to your 3C589 card or whatever you happen to have, right? Okay. Oh, so we're copying things down. That's fine. Okay, question. Yeah, please.
Is this only on the machine that you're sniffing with? And you have no access to that one, I would assume.
Okay, the question is this only on the machine that you're sniffing with? And the answer is yes, this is on the machine that is going to be capturing the traffic, okay? You can program this remotely, but you are going to have a session on this machine in order to monitor what you are going to capture, all right? To extend that a little more, you also need to have this machine physically connected to your network. And there are some pitfalls where, for example, routers can and will block off your segment so that you can't get anything beyond that. Okay, bridges routers do that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that when I get to that section about covering your tracks. Okay, can I take the slide away yet? Do we need to take a picture here? We can take the slide away. Okay, this is on the net, okay? As I said, I didn't write this up, I grabbed this, so you can find this if you need it, we'll talk.
Do you have the
The question is, do I have this whole thing on the net? And the answer is no, I have not yet put this out where it can be accessed on the net. I will put this talk out where it can be accessed after I give it. I was actually thinking of writing it up as an article and putting it in 2600 or something like that. I don't know yet, but I will make it available after I'm done with this, okay? Any other questions? Okay. Next, I want to talk about the programming aspects. For those of you who are programmers, feel free to correct me. For those of you who are not programmers, please hang in there because the next part is about covering your tracks, and that's important. Okay? Let's see. We will start with... So
Full edge down. Need to be able to see it. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to talk about some thermal structures. I'm going to talk about in-depth, low-level stuff here. How many people have written device drivers? A few. Okay. Device drivers. How many people have written device drivers? For those of you who haven't written device drivers, I really recommend that you do it. It's not any different from any other regular programming. It's just programming. You make a little more money, though. okay. Specifically, when you're writing in a Unix environment, you're writing in the kernel. You're writing in that part of the operating system itself. This is a very abbreviated picture of a structure called IFNet. Okay? IFNet exists. Well, an IFNet structure exists, I have to say this correctly, for each address that an interface, no, wrong paragraph. An IFNet structure exists for every interface, okay? So if you have EP0, which would be an Ethernet interface, you will have one IFNet structure for that interface, okay? If that interface supports multiple communications, SLIP, TPP, you'll have them chained, okay? If you look at what I've got up there, the third variable in the structure, if underscore next, is the forward pointer for the structures. Everybody knows linked lists. Yes? Who's familiar with linked lists? I'm trying real hard to gauge my audience here. Good. Okay. So these are chained together. They are also, there's another structure, and I'm just going to pull this down and show you the next structure. I hope this doesn't confuse everything. The next structure is called if address. Okay? If you look at the top structure, the fourth variable down, it says if address pointer if underscore address list. Each interface that can support multiple addresses, okay? You can have, you know, if you're on a firewall, you can have two addresses for your Ethernet, right? Inside, outside. You will have an if address structure for each address that that interface supports, okay? Now, again, we're talking about kernel programming, we're talking about root access. We're talking about actually getting down into the driver level, but I want to show you these things because if you're that far into the thing and you want to know how to get into it, this is the way to do it. Next. Oh, and the last structure. I'm going to just flip this up and show you the last structure here very quickly. I'm sorry? Oh, okay. Can you see that if I just have all of it there? Let me move this down just... See, the one I want to show you is that one on the bottom. Can anybody see the one on the bottom? Okay. That's the if-rec structure. Okay. If-rec, I call it that, is a name for the interface and a union which contains many things. One of the things that that union contains is those flags I mentioned earlier when I said that you want to set your card into promiscuous mode. Okay. It's a binary flag. It's a bit flag. All right. And it is returned in an if-rec structure by a mechanism that I'm about to talk about in just 1 second. Okay? So you need to know the structure so that you can reference that bit, so that you can toggle that bit, so that you can set that bit, so that you can put your card into promiscuous mode, which is the point of the whole thing. Did everybody follow me? All right. Yes. This is good. Okay, the question is, what libraries are needed for this program? As far as libraries that are needed, I don't know what libraries are needed off the top of my head. I can tell you that these guys, well, this, all these structures that I just showed you, let me get the foil back up. All of these three structures that I just showed you on the systems that I run and all the systems that I've been able to investigate, which is not all of them. Okay, as I said, if there are programmers here and I make a mistake, please correct me. All these guys live in if.h, which is in the net subdirectory. So it's probably, what, user source sys net if.h, if for interface. Okay? I'm sorry, say that again? Oh, well... Oh, what is the platform that you're working on, is the question. Yeah, in a Solaris environment. Anybody know whether that was in a different place?
PPP.v4. if you lie down, no one will lift you down. I'm going to get 60 feet off the spring, we'll break the feet down.
Okay, did everybody hear that? The answer is TCP dump relies on a library libp cap. Okay?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, look at the source for TCP and, you know, and the includes, for the most part. Where does the library live? I mean, where is the library referenced from TCP dump? It's not referenced from the source. It just pulls stuff in from there.
Well, libp cap, libp cap.a, TCP dump.
Okay, so TCP dump links libpcap.a. So look for that if you get TCP comp and you try to. Yeah, if you get the source and you compile it, you need that library, is the point. Okay? Okay. We're going to talk about source code because not everybody has access to the source code on their machine. And if you're running FreeBSD, good for you. But if you're running. Yeah, I know TCP dump is, but I mean the source for your kernel. Right. If you need to recompile your kernel, you may have a problem because you may be running HP UX, and if you're lucky, they left first on the thing like they do at Tactel. But they might not have it there, so you might have a problem. So you might need to know these structures so that you can program it sort of in the black box. Okay? Any other questions? Well, I've got this stuff up here. Okay. How do you reference these things? Okay, I showed you all these neat structures, big deal, it's header files. How do you reference them? There is something called an ioctl, which is a system call. Anybody here worked with ioctls? This is a good audience, I like this. Okay, ioctl stands for IO control. It's a system call that you use to reference an IO device in a program. Okay, that's how you talk to the device driver, by writing an ioctl, okay, which has the form ioctl parentheses file descriptor command pointer. File descriptor is open file descriptor for the device. All right, if you've got Berkeley packet filter, that's BPF0 maybe, or it's NIT0. Okay, it's this device that I talked about a half an hour ago. The command is the command for the driver, which I'm going to explain right below there. The pointer is an optional third argument, which we probably are going to need for this specific example. I talked about the flags for the interface. Okay, there's more than one flag. There's not just the little bit that you have to set to put it in promiscuous mode. There's other bits, obviously. You get the whole thing by saying ioctl SIOCGIF flags. It's SIOC get interface flags. It's hard to read because it's all together. I have a hand. Question. What book is this out of is the question. This whole talk is out of everything I've got. Anything by Stevens, any of the Comer books, actually the Comer books don't touch on this that much. Okay, Unix Systems Programming by Stevens, definitely. And also, there's something else, but I can't think of what it is. Ask me offline and I'll tell you, okay, because I've written down some RFCs to refer to, but I haven't written down all the bibliography for the talk, okay? Anything else? Okay. Getting the flags, obviously, you get the flags. The AMPR IFREC is that IFREC structure I showed you in the last foil, the one that has the union in it, the union where all the flags are. So you basically, you allocate the structure, you make this call. If the call succeeds, you get back this structure that has the flag values in it, which you can read and you can toggle. Okay? Then you try to set them, which is SIOC set interface flags. Okay? It's just a pound to find. You may have a little trouble with that. Because if you're smart and you write a Unix kernel, you don't just let people set the interface flags. The code, right below that, where it says kernel code for privileged commands like setting flags, usually starts with something that looks like this. There's a function called SUser. What SUser is it verifies your user credentials. If your user credentials are not root, this call will fail. Okay? If you're root, don't sweat it. If you're not root, we'll talk about something you can do with SUser a little later that may fix that problem for you. Okay? Questions? Good. Okay. I said I was going to talk a little bit about different interfaces as much as I can. What I just showed you was for Berkeley systems, BSD-based systems. Okay, everybody who knows Unix, there's two flavors, BSD System 5. Here's the Streams interface. No more Berkeley sockets, we're into Streams now for all you who are running AT&T, HPUX, that kind of stuff. It is exactly the same kind of thing. If you're familiar with Streams programming, this is going to be redundant. If you're not familiar with Streams programming, there are two basic ways of doing network programming under Unix, Berkeley sockets, and Streams. Just different implementations of the same thing. This is exactly what I just showed you, but it's for System 5, it's for Streams. What System 5 requires is it requires you to issue what's called an I_str, a Streams IOCTL. It's a specific kind of IOCTL. So instead of saying, you know, get the flag, set the flag, in the second parameter, you say I_str, that indicates that you're issuing a Streams IOCTL. Streams IOCTL, essentially, the stream is a linked list of modules. There's a stream head, and then there's modules, and then it null terminates, okay? The stream head gets this call, translates it into a message, sends it down the stream. If any module in that stream recognizes what you've sent as a request, it'll process it, and it'll send your response back up to the stream head. If you don't get recognition, you get a -1. Questions? Okay. But this is essentially the same thing for streams, okay? And again, I'm touching on this very briefly. If you guys want to take it offline and talk about the details of it, I'd be glad to do that. Okay, now for my favorite part, which is called covering your gaps. If you're doing stuff like this, you are going to leave footprints. You do not want to do that. You want to erase those footprints. Let's talk about some of those ways to do that. I'm going to assume that anybody who's sophisticated enough to get root access to a machine understands how UTMP and WTMP and other log files work, okay? And has a copy of erase.c and knows how to use it. Is that a correct assumption? Yes? Okay, good. How can you confirm or deny what? I'm sorry.
So like if you confirm or deny.
Oh, you can either confirm or deny. See him when we're done. Okay? Yeah, that works. You guys know each other? I'm going to talk to them when I'm done here. If you have access to the source, there are some really neat things that you can do. You can build a new kernel. Okay? If your kernel doesn't have to support one of these nice NIT devices that you'd really like to use to tap into the Ethernet card, you can go and find the source and rebuild the kernel. If you rebuild the kernel, I think you're going to generate some log entries. You obviously want to, you know, clean up those log entries. Not to mention that your date's going to be wrong. Not wrong, just different. Okay? Yeah, reloading the kernel is not that big a deal. Rebooting the machine might get noticed. Okay? Remember I showed you that, where's my floor? I want to put that back up and show you this again. Because this gentleman asked a question earlier and I want to use that question again. Long floor. Okay, remember this part down here at the bottom where I said there's a function called SUser that verifies your user credentials? Okay, somebody asked me what header file does that live in? ucred.h. Okay, that's definitely where it lives. It may live in other places in your source tree. Okay? This little function right here is the only thing that keeps you from setting the flags if you don't have root access. So let's say you just don't have a lot of time and you really need to get in there and make sure that you can do this other stuff later. But you can rebuild your kernel. Go find this function, mod the source, so that SUser doesn't care what your user credentials are. Okay? You rebuild with a new SUser, and then you don't have to be root anymore. Because it doesn't care about your credentials when you try to set the flags. And since you're the only person on the machine setting the flags, probably not going to get noticed. Now, some other things might get noticed when it checks the credentials, you know. So again, you know, buyer beware. But this is a real nice shortcut if you're in a hurry. Let's see, certain other things that you can get tripped up on. In a Unix system, there's a command called ifconfig, interface configuration. Pretty much anybody can run ifconfig. If you set up an interface, an Ethernet interface, like EP0, into promiscuous mode, and you run ifconfig, just type it in as prompt, it will show up as a promiscuous interface. Not a good idea. So, if again you have access to the source, I suggest you mod ifconfig. If you don't have access to the source, there are alternatives. Okay, there are things like rootkits out there where you can get, you can get the rootkit, and ifconfig is there, and you just copy the new ifconfig over the old ifconfig, and the old ifconfig would have shown the promiscuous mode, but no one doesn't. So you can do that sort of thing. Again, you have root access to do these things. Okay? Cover your trail. NetSat, same thing. Yeah, question.
Would it be possible to binary edit ifconfig and replace the promiscuous string with the space?
Okay, the question is, would it be possible to binary edit ifconfig, the ifconfig binary, and replace the promiscuous string with spaces? The answer is no, because promiscuous shows up. You know, when you do ifconfig on your interface, you get two lines. The second line has your flags and brackets, okay? And that's going to have comma promiscuous written in it. If it shows up with comma spaces, that's kind of going to make somebody wonder what the heck's going on. If you're a sysadmin and you see that, you might scratch your head a little. So I guess it's possible to do that, but I don't advise you do that. The best way to do that is to just get in there and rebuild the thing, or find somebody that has done it that way already. Okay? Yeah, question.
You talked about rebuilding the parallel order to put it in using the ifconfig, you say ifconfig up, down, can you just set up, say ifconfig promiscuous?
Okay, the question is, you can use ifconfig to put your interface up and down, and the question is, can you use ifconfig to put your interface into promiscuous mode? As best I know, no, you cannot do that. If I'm wrong, somebody please correct me, but I've never seen that. We've got a guy here with a laptop who's going to try it, so let's hold on a second. With the Jeopardy theme. Okay, he's spell checking ifconfig. The answer is no, you cannot. Okay, so you need to rebuild that command or replace it somehow. NetSat, another command. Oh, we got another question? Yeah.
Yes, could we cover all these things that can happen to pass the other, so like the flag
okay, would you please say the question again, because I missed the middle part.
Okay, could we cover detection about all the things by passing
okay, good. The question is, could we circumvent the application level mods by modifying the driver code itself to not pass back the status flag that says I'm in promiscuous mode? The answer is yes. I purposely didn't touch on that because I didn't know how sophisticated in terms of driver programming my audience was going to be. I apologize. But yes, you can do that. If you have access to the driver source code, I'm assuming that you may have access to your source for your operating system. Your driver source, I don't know if you have access to that. Okay? You may not have access to any of it, in which case I'm just going to try and point out that it's real obvious when you do ifconfig and it comes up promiscuous, or when you do netstat, the same thing. So if you can replace the binaries for those commands, it buys you some time. Okay? None of this is an absolutely foolproof way to avoid detection, but what you're doing is you're buying yourself some time, because what you're essentially trying to do is monitor network traffic. The longer you can do that undetected, obviously, the better it's going to be for you. Any more? I'm sorry, go ahead.
You have to have IP40 turned on the box in order to
The question is, do you have to have IP forwarding enabled in your kernel configuration in order to catch the packets? And the best answer I have off the top of my head is, I do, and I'm not sure you have to do that. I would check with, check with the documentation for your operating system. Because I don't have experience with all these operating systems that I'm talking about. The ones that I do have access to, I do have IP forwarding I put it in there when I build the kernel in promiscuous mode, okay? But I don't know for certain whether you need to have that or not. Yeah?
To the best of my knowledge, IP forwarding is only used for gateway.
Okay, the statement here is that to the best of this gentleman's knowledge, IP forwarding is only used when you're building a gateway or when you're configuring your host as a gateway. Okay.
So we need it.
Right, but you're
you need it if you're
not rebroadcasting. Need it.
Yeah, if you're a gateway, you need IP forwarding. If you're just reading the traffic, but you're not routing the traffic beyond that point, you don't need it. Okay. A little more about covering yourself. There are some programs available that will indicate whether or not an interface is in promiscuous mode. One of them is very well known. It's called CPM, which stands for Check Promiscuous Mode. Okay. CPM is available for many platforms, the source is available, and it is a really good example of this programming technique that I've tried to illustrate here as far as the structures and the ioctals. So if you're interested in how to do this at the programming level, I suggest that you go out and FTP that and read the source code for that, because it will give you at least what I've given you and probably a lot more. Okay?
Another program called GitPack for
Did everybody hear that? Good, because that was the rest of my paragraph, and I need to say it. Actually, the last statement is, if those commands exist on your system, rebuild or replace or else disable them. Okay? It is obviously, you know, if you can disable the command, that's not going to buy you a lot of time. It's just going to piss off the sysadmin and make him start looking why it's not working. But it might be enough in the case of what you're doing. Okay, disabling is something that I, like, really try not to do, because it's really obvious that something's broken at that time. But sometimes it's all you can do. So you just, you know, you want to buy the time, so you do. Any more questions? I don't want to leave anybody out here. Because okay, I got a question back here. Okay, I'm going to try my best to repeat what you just said. What I think you just said is that with regards to IP forwarding and packet sniffing, it's a good idea to enable IP forwarding in order to get other hosts to forward their traffic to your hosts in order for you to be able to sniff the traffic. Is that what you said? Close. Okay, let me just qualify one thing there, it is possible to do packet sniffing without having your interface in promiscuous mode. Unfortunately, the only thing you're going to sniff is packets that are routed to your particular machine. Okay? If you're trying to get stuff that's on the physical network that you're attached to, you need to be in promiscuous mode, and that is going to be traffic on your physical network. Now, whether that's routed from outside your physical network or inside your physical network, okay, isn't really going to matter, because your interface is in promiscuous mode. Promiscuous mode does not mean give me all the traffic and do not continue to pass it on. It means give me all the traffic and continue to pass it on. So stuff that's not routed to your machine will be effectively routed, okay, in that instance, but you also get to see it. It's not a denial of service.
Well, what I think he was meaning to say is in a switch network.
Okay.
Set up the machine to pass the traffic through you so that it comes over your segment, which it wouldn't normally do in a switch network.
Right, okay.
And then you wouldn't need a gateway.
Right, within a switch network, you need to do that as a gateway. Okay, but I really was trying to, like, not...
Well, that's what he was saying.
Okay, yes, I understand now. Yeah, that is... Did everybody hear what we're talking about here? No. Okay. Does anybody mind if we take it offline? Because I'm almost done. Any other questions? Yeah, in the back.
Yeah, will packet sniffing work on a 10-base unit or a 10-base?
Okay, the question I'm hearing is, will sniffing work on 10-base T, 10-base 2, because of the topology, well, not the topologies, but because of the actual architecture of the network. Yes? Okay. Oh, it's a hub issue. Right. Right. Switch hubs and MAC addresses. Right. Yes, that's true. On the 10Base-T network, you're not going to see it with a switch hub. Okay, 10Base-2, I think you will see it. Yes?
Yes, is there a way that I can avoid detection by other machines that my network interface?
Okay, the question is there a way that you can avoid other machines detecting that your interface is in promiscuous mode? And the answer to that, as far as I know, is I don't know, because I've never been able to read other people's interfaces, you know, across the network. If I'm on the, I can look at the interfaces on my machine. If I want to do it remotely, right, would I issue a remote if config?
I have heard rumors that if you upgrade your network cable to a cable that doesn't have a transmit wire, you will not be able to use it for any other activity on the network that you're connecting to work on this.
Okay, this is getting into hardware, and unfortunately, hardware is not my forte. Okay, so I would suggest that if you want to talk about this, I'd be glad to talk about it, but I'd rather take it offline because I don't want to slow down the conference. Yes?
One last question, token ring. You said you'd cover it a little bit.
Yeah, I said I'd talk about token ring a little bit. Basically, let me ask a question. Who understands the topology of token ring? Okay, so you know that basically the token goes around and you don't want to hold the token because if you hold the token, everybody else's network sort of dies. And that's what you'd have to do in promiscuous mode is hold the token while all the traffic comes to you. And people start to notice that. So that's why... The question again is, can you set the copy bit and sync to a copy and pass the traffic on? And I'm pretty sure you can do that, but I've got limited exposure to Token Ring. I've only worked with the IBM stuff and the Madge card, and that was a couple of years ago. So I'm not sure that you can do it on all the implementations. I also know that most Token Ring cards do not support promiscuous mode. There are one or two on the market that I could find that do support it. Yes? Okay, the question is there a way of turning promiscuous mode into a denial of service? I would suspect that you can do that because the volume of your network traffic is going to be fairly large, and you're going to fill up your queue or your file or whatever you're writing this stuff to fairly quickly. I did not touch on the specifics of things like TCP dump and how you filter the traffic. If you're specifically interested in FTP sessions coming across the DEF CON network, and by the way, I know that I'm talking about this and all you guys are going to run out and start sniffing the network, so I put SSH on my machine. Okay, but if you're getting every single packet that goes across that network, yeah, you're getting a huge volume of traffic, and it is very quickly going to disable your machine. So yes, it is possible to do that. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but yes, it is possible to do it.
What I mean is get all the packets on the network directly to your machine and no other machine.
Oh, okay, you're talking in terms of routing it directly to the machine. Routing and stuff is something I'd really rather not touch on right now. Let's talk about it offline if you want to, okay? Anybody else? I want to make sure I cover everybody. Yes?
A more effective way of running a denial of service with a packet sniffer is merely wreaking havoc with the sequence numbers within the TCP socket.
Okay, did everybody hear that? The comment was a more effective denial of service attack is to screw around with the sequence numbers in the TCP sockets, a la hijacking sessions. But again, you know, sort of derivative.
Well, you don't have to take over them. You just throw enough garbage into it that the sequence gets all messed up and the client server can track more.
Yeah, or you can fill up the queue so that they can't get any more SIMs. But yeah, let's not delve into that if it's okay with you, because I understand that probably everybody understands it, but I want to keep on track here. I don't know what the schedule is like. Anything else? Anybody else? Yes?
Yeah, this is really a question.
Okay, the comment is that there are advertisements for machines which are called network protocol monitors, which you don't have to do any configuration. You just basically plug the thing into the network and you are monitoring the network. And they're, what, 10 grand each? They're fairly sophisticated hardware-software combinations.
I think the turn-down type servers don't have all the
Okay. Okay, if that is, again, if that is an area of interest for people, this gentleman seems to have some knowledge. If you want to talk about it offline, you know, we can do that. Because I didn't do the research on that. I specifically stayed away from that. I wanted to talk about things that I thought people could access with what they have access to. Yes? Okay, the comment is that network protocol analyzers are also not invisible. And yes, that's true. I actually have a note here somewhere that says that certain hubs, and maybe the gentleman who asked the hub question can clarify this, but certain hubs do log connects. Okay, is that, anybody have experience with that? Can nod their head or shake their head? Okay, yeah, certain hubs do log connects. So if you physically jack into somebody's network, like we did at Access All Areas last week, and they're looking at you, if they're looking at the console, they will see the connection in the log, okay? Which is, again, when I talk about covering your tracks, that's something that you need to take into consideration. Yeah?
Even if packets are pulling across your interface, that means that we created a sort of package won't flow across the network anymore, and if you can't accept.
The question is, with regards to, again, denial of service, could you use the packet sniffing to fill up, we'll talk about the difference between filling up the queue and filling up whatever repository you're using to capture the packets. Those of you who are familiar with the SYN thread code and understand how the TCP handshake works, you know that you know, send enough SYN packets and you fill up the queue, okay? That is a very primitive denial of service. What we're talking about here doesn't really relate to that. What I was considering with this gentleman's question was more along the lines of, if you're capturing a large volume of network traffic, you're going to start dedicating processor time, and you're going to start dedicating hardware resources, aka disk space or memory, of that machine to storing this network traffic. And that's going to very quickly impact the performance of your machine. So theoretically, not the network, just that single machine. So if you were to enable promiscuous mode and you set it up in such a way that you captured everything that came across the network and you didn't do anything with it other than log it or store it or write it to disk, you know, and you start writing these big 10K buffers or something, yeah, you're very quickly going to impact the performance of that machine. Okay? But I mean, I can think of, that's the way to do it. If you want to, if you're looking for a way to do it, it's kind of a hard way to do it, but yeah, you can. Yes?
You're talking about monitoring over a long period of time, but you're not going to have space to store this if you're doing it over a long period of time.
Okay, the statement is that you're talking about monitoring over a long period of time, but you're not going to have the space to do this. And the only thing I can say in response to that is, when you're monitoring network traffic, it is a good idea, with, as I said, go read the man page for TCP dump or Etherfine. They all have man pages, okay? There are ways of filtering what it is you're monitoring. You get every single piece of network traffic, but you're only interested in the telnet packets coming across on, what, 23 or, you know? So you only get those packets, the rest of it gets discarded, and that's how you can avoid doing that. For example, if I'd had time, I really wanted to set up a sniffer across the hall so that I could, you know, get all you guys who are like shelling out to root over there in your home machine to check your email or whatever. But I didn't have time to do that. And if I was going to do something like that, let's say I just wanted to grab your mail, I would filter everything that's had port 25 on it. Okay? So I start getting everybody's email. Now that's going to be big, right? And depending on what kind of software or what kind of program you've written, you can filter what you're receiving, okay? And filtering is the last step. I mean, you're capturing the stuff off the network, and then you need to filter to get what it is you want, because if you don't, you're going to get every MIB, you're going to get every routing query, you're going to get every DNS query, you're going to get a lot of crap, and really quickly you're going to have a problem. We'll take some more questions. I just want to mention, I put up this as the last foil, okay? I put up this list of RFCs because I was talking about the protocols. I talked about things like IP. I didn't talk about IP version 6 at all. I'm sorry. I hope somebody else will talk about it. But I wanted to put up the RFCs because people who are interested in specific issues regarding the TCP protocol suite, these RFCs are where the definitive answers are, okay? I know most everybody knows how to get RFCs, but for those of you who don't, okay, this is a list of some RFCs and how you can get them. There's another question, yes? Okay, the question is, if you're sniffing stuff and you've got a packet that comes to your machine, is it addressed to your machine?
No.
Okay, just address any machine. What is to prohibit you from modding the packet and rerouting that packet somewhere else? And the answer is your programming ability. Okay? Really, that is. Because if you can grab the packet, if you can grab the raw frame, and you have access to the source address and the destination address, there's nothing to keep you from, you know, modding those addresses and taking that packet and putting it back on the queue to be sent out, except programming ability and access. Yeah, yeah, and if you can do that, I know some people who want to see you when we're done. Yeah. Okay, did everybody hear the comment? Okay, because Ethernet is send and pray, basically, and that's true, because you need to get it and turn it around before it gets to its destination. If it gets to the destination before the modded packet, you lose. Okay, say that one more time, because I want to repeat what you said for everybody. Right. Okay. Okay. The comment that I just got is that there was a paper written recently, and again, you have to find this gentleman in the DEF CON hat. And what he's saying is that if you insert null data into the stream, into the network stream, you can basically put the sequence numbers out of sequence so that the real packet, as opposed to the packet that you've modded and put back on the wire, when the real packet gets there, it'll be out of sequence and it'll get dropped. And then your packet, which you've modded, okay, and obviously you're going to have to track the sequence numbers, right? Okay, but again, if I start talking about, I don't want to get really, really technical. This is dry already. let me ask really quickly, is Jeff here and how am I doing for time? Good. Questions? Yes? Okay, the question is, if you spoof a packet and you send it back out, won't your machine's MAC address be put into the header and won't the other recipient machine complain? Okay? Now, aside from the fact that we're getting onto this book that I, like, made a shirt of last year, which is packet spoofing as opposed to packet sniffing, the answer is, if you've got the raw frame, I'm assuming that you're not going to strip all the headers off and then resend the raw data out. You're going to mod the frame and put it back on the wire, right? So in that case, the MAC address is whatever you make it.
So the MAC
is automatically
added automatically by
force? No, because the MAC is part of 802.2. So MAC is going to be in the frames. You have access to it if you're at that level. But again, we're down at the driver level now, and this is really deep. You know, this is the kind of programming that if you've had this much time to do this, you don't really need root access on other machines. You've got too much time on your hands. Okay, the comment is that there are some tools that will allow you to modify the MAC address of frames to whatever you want it to be. And again, find a guy in the DEF CON hat. No. The piece shirt. Piece of what? You can't put that on a shirt. Yeah, question here.
Are there any general ideas on doing this like copying segments over segments?
Okay, the question is, are there any ideas about how to do this outside of the physical network hopping segments, okay? I have some ideas on it. I'd really rather not go into it right now. If you want to talk to me offline, we'll talk about MIB and stuff like that. But, you know, routing and things like that are things that I didn't really plan to cover in the talk. I have some ideas. I'm sure other people have ideas. How are we doing? Any more questions? Going once. Going twice.
Going to hell.
I think I've just been reviewed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.